हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैत्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके सो देन भक्ति संदर्भ अध्याय वन अधिकरण थ्री भक्ति अलोन इज द कंक्लूजन ऑल स्क्रिप्चर्स। So then, continuing with Srila Prabhupada's purport, the point that's being made on Anucheta 31, bhakti is superior to karma, jnana, and yoga mentioned in the previous two chapters. In the next chapter also, bhakti is said to be superior to worship of devatas. Thus, bhakti is the final process, abhideya, after describing, okay. Abhideya. So this whole point is abhideya means this: what is the actual meaning of something? The abhida, as we saw before, is the abhida shakti. Then is that shakti by which you can understand the direct meaning of something. And so that's the general potency that's at work. And then we'll see that there is sometimes when you're using poetic forms, then there's the Lakshana Shakti, you know, so it'll have that more poetic aspect, a more indirect kind of meaning, where it's saying something specific, but it's using words that don't directly, literally mean what is being said. And so here, if we say bhakti is the abhideya, that means that's the direct meaning of the Vedas. So the Vedas, what they're saying is actually the Abhida Shakti, and that is that bhakti is the main thing. So then continuing on page 62. Okay. And I think that I know we're on the third thoughts of becoming one with the Lord. That I know.
Yeah, that's where we are.
Yes, okay. Thoughts of becoming one with the Lord or being merged in the Brahma Jyoti. Exhibitions of kama spirit, if they are desire for one's own satisfaction to be free from the material desires, right? So it still takes on the material, it still takes on kama, it's still mundane consciousness, because I mean it can, he's pointing out here on the material platform, because it's one's own satisfaction that what is one is freed from material miseries. You're not trying to become technically freed from material happiness. You want to be freed from material miseries. You know, so you're not, so since you've understood that working for material desire brings misery, therefore you're willing to give up seemingly those desires to give up the misery. Because the soul, by nature being Sachit Ananda, the Ananda aspect then can relate to happiness. It can't relate to distress. So when there's distress, then we take it that this is, you know, improper for the soul, which it is. But unfortunately, then what happens is we take that negative or skeptical aspect that there is no, you know, as such happiness by interaction or relationships and that. So we give that up and go to this negative or to this you know, impersonal kind of concept of being liberated from material existence. So it's still material. It doesn't get beyond the material world. So that means, so for, you know, just as for those wanting, you know, to go to a good facility here on the heavenly planets, those who just want, you know, the immediate results now and that, those who want the immediate results of the senses, and those who want liberation from the material world, they're all materialists, all of them. Whether they're intellectual, they're religious, they're very pious, they're very kind, they're very, all these wonderful, wonderful things that may be there that are good qualities. But the weakness comes, it's all material because it's all meant for our own satisfaction. So even though someone may be very elevated, but since it's for his own satisfaction, it ruins it. It's only when it's actually meant just for pleasing Krishna, then it takes on the real point. So that's the point. Bhakti alone is the conclusion of the scriptures. Because then karma, jnana, and yoga, they all have that aspect of it's for oneself. And so it's only then with bhakti that then it means it's for the Lord, because that's what bhakti means. It means mixed bhakti means it's for the Lord and it's for ourselves. But the point is that's just the transition state between it's just for ourselves and not for Krishna to it's just for Krishna, it's not for ourselves. So in that mean middle position, then there can be the material desires that are there, you know, over, but it's about devotion, but it has these underlying other aspects. And so I associate it by the performance of the devotional process, by chanting the holy name. Then one can come to the point where these things start to go away very nicely. And, you know, again, and then just the devotional service shines forth. And then it takes on its transcendental position. Right? A pure devotee does not want liberation so that he may be relieved from the miseries of life, right? So he's not worried about that being in the material world, things are bad, because he knows the material world means it's bad. It would be like going out to the garbage dump and then wanting it to smell like roses, you know, and be very comfortable and nice places to sit and, you know, wonderful. No, it's a garbage dump. It's meant like that. So material world is made for, so it has misery. So the devotee is not worried about getting rid of the miseries. He's because that's not the soul's nature, is to get rid of miseries. The soul's nature is to be absorbed in ananda or happiness that comes from that spiritual relationship with Krishna. So when you have the spiritual relationship with Krishna, it gets rid of the material miseries. So because we don't see it that way. Right? Means when we can have a, let's say you're in a very nice situation, but for us, it may be a very hellish situation, you know, because the experience, just like, let's say you have a bunch of extremely wealthy kids and they're sitting in the, you know, or like that, or just that they're sitting in the, you know, lounge in of the most expensive hotel, you know, everything's nice, the air conditioning, the seats, they're bringing around snacks and drinks, you know, the people are coming and taking care of them very nicely, but because they're in a hurry, they're having to sit there and they want to go do something. So for them, it's a hellish situation. But for other people, they would be, for them, it would be heaven to be there. So we always remember this idea of the heaven and hell, or happiness and distress, is actually perception. Because you have people in the worst situations and they think it's nice. They're comfortable. And others in the best situation, it's not quite up to their standards, so they're feeling bad. They didn't get the standard when they went to the big hotel. They didn't get their standard presidential suite like that. You know, they could only get, you know, some other, you know, first class suite. And so it's just not up to their standards. So they're miserable, even though they're staying in the best, you know, hotel with best service. They're still miserable. You know, and the guy living down on the street and that, he's homeless, but, you know, he's found a little corner. It's not bad. It keeps him out of the rain and no one bothers him. And so you ask him how he's doing. Yeah, he's okay. So we always have to remember is that these concepts, these are perceptions. So there is, yes, the conditioning matches certain material facilities. You know, we always have to remember we're not this conditioning. So ultimately, the miseries and happiness and distress that comes from our conditioning isn't us anyway. And so for the devotee, it says here, the pure devotees, they do not want liberation to be relieved from the miseries of life. So for them, being liberated from material entanglement is not about getting rid of the miseries. It's about being situated on the transcendental platform that they can serve Krishna. Right, because if within my heart I have a material desire, that's going to create the misery. So all my miseries are coming from my material desires; they're not coming from something else. Right. So then, the devotee wants to just be able to please Krishna. So that means he wants to be on the transcendental position where he has no material desire. That's his idea. So by him being in that position, then he's naturally liberated, but that's not why he wants to be there. He wants to be there because he can serve Krishna. You know, does that make sense? That's the idea. So liberation is just a situation for him in which it's favorable to serve Krishna, but it's not about the benefits he gets from the liberation. So it's very, very different. Because the one, it's a goal. I want to be freed from this, and then I'll be happy. But here it's, no, I want to be able to please Krishna and make him happy. So the situation that's there is where I'm not distracted by the material desires. Does that make sense? Yes, please, Charu.
So very recently in both Bhagavad Gita and Shriya Upanishad, Prabhupada mentioned making the best use of a bad bargain. Which, of course, those of us who know what he means. But he means, like you were saying earlier, you get to a junkyard and you just try to make it comfortable. And they miss the whole point of using the human body, the human form, to actually inquire into the absolute. So basically what you were just saying there shows both sides of making the best use of a bad bargain.
Yes. That's the thing is the pure Vaishnav viewpoint is perfectly balanced. It has what's actually...
He put me...
Okay, yeah, recordings in... You did it?
Yeah, this time I'm co-host, so I can do it. The last time I wasn't, so it didn't allow me.
How do you go? How do you go? Okay. Yes. So... It's a very delicate point, because those who are attached to the more, you know, liberal aspect, they'll think that they're doing the right thing, and they're doing partly the right thing. Those who are more into the traditional aspects and all that, the different rules, the forms of it, then they will appreciate, because they will have they'll be doing part of also what bhakti is giving. But they still will miss some of the point. So the pure devotion means it has all those things. It's broad-minded. See, the modern thing is about being liberal. No, it's about being broad-minded. Because if you take conservative, it moves the view over here. And the modern liberal, it moves the view over here. But you see the space of how much it can accommodate is the same. So only in the pure bhakti, it's broad-minded. It can accommodate both. You can see, yes, these devotees are, you know, they're wanting to make it that, you know, available. They want it to be things like that. So that's a nice mentality, because they want it that. But the problem is they're dropping all the tradition and all the practices that are the reason that you would want to attract people to it, right? In other words, the devotional practices are what we want people to be able to follow. That's how they'll get the benefit. So if I get rid of all those practices to make it so it's accessible to them, what have they actually gained? Right? And for the others that they're following very nicely and all that, that's very nice. So it'll have a form that's very, very good and strong and a nice community and culture. But at the same time, as if the mentality isn't that of pure bhakti, then even though they're following very nicely the tradition, that they've missed the point. So one loses all the tradition, and it makes it all about the individual. But then the problem is the individual doesn't have any standards or direction. And then the other, then the individuality may be lost to some degree, because it has the, you know, everybody has to follow all these different things. But at the same time, is that mentality of the pure devotion about the individuality and how each one can develop is lost. In other words, both of them are very narrow in their view. So the point is as giving here, bhakti alone is the conclusion. So if anybody's connected to bhakti, you know, from the parampara, that is perfect. But the point is you want to get the more perfect and most perfect. So that they're connected, that's perfect. But at the same time, as those parts that aren't on the platform of purity, those have to be removed. You know, you have to take out those things, and then it becomes very good. So So as it points out here, even without so-called liberation, pure devotee is aspirant for the satisfaction of the Lord, right? So even if he's not, he's still in the material world and it's still an annoying place. He's still just trying to please the Lord. And that then makes him happy, right? That's the actual happiness. And then the material world doesn't seem as bad, even though around him, the place may be crazy, but he's still trying to just please the Lord. That's the actual position. This whole idea, like you see in the modern, the Krishna, heaven on earth, goodwill to men. It's not even, before it was, okay, you know, this place is a dump, but we'll go very nicely and then we'll go to heaven. It'll be nice there. Now people aren't even, you know, willing to go for that. It's no, it's like, this place should be heaven. You know? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, I have a question. In the Islam, in Sufism, there is one Sufi, famous Sufi, his name is Jalaluddin Rumi, and he wrote a poem, and in this poem, one of the verse is about sheep herd and Prophet Moses. And there is some story that once Prophet Moses, Muslim call him Musa, he was in the desert and he met one sheepherd. And this sheepherd prayed to Allah by a strange way. He told him, oh, please come, I want to offer you my sweets, I want to put you on my bed and put on you a warm blanket, I will sweep your room and I will comb your hairs and I will take out, I don't know how to call this insect, I will take out lint from your hairs. And he prayed such a way. And when Prophet Moses heard this prayers, he became very angry and he started to blame this sheepherd. He said him, how you can approach to God by such a way, you not respect him, you don't know how to pray officially. And the sheepherd started to cry and he went to the desert. He left this place and he said, yes, I am very guilty, please forgive me. And he went away. And then the prophet Moses, he started to listen to the angry voice of Allah, and Allah said him that you don't know what is in the heart of those who love me, and your prayers, your everything according to the law is only for your own fame. You want to glorify yourself, but you don't know how was born the heart of the of this soul, and why did you hurt him? And then he ordered to him to find this simple man and to tell him to continue his prayers. And in the end, the Jalaluddin Rumi, he said that I'm not from those people who believe that God can reveal himself, but what I can do, he said these words to the prophet Moses. And I want to ask you, Guru Maharaj, can we call this, can we say that this sheepherd, he has a bhakti, and if it's bhakti, but he never was connected with parampara, sampradaya, he didn't know sambandha, bhidaya, prayojana, what type of bhakti it is?
It means that the thing is anything that's supported by the scriptures and all that, then we see is then, you know, it has its appropriateness up to the point that is there. Because he's seeing that he just wants to do nice things for God. Now, God won't have nits. You understand? There are no nits in God's hair. You understand? Nits, lice. There's no lice in God's hair. But he's thinking, we're here, we get that, and he wants to do something nice. And so it's one of the nice things to do is help people get nits out of their hair, see that they're comfortable, this and that. So it has that personal element that is there. So in other words, this person has done some nice devotion than that in the past. But then, you know, how they ended up in the position we're in, then, you know, we don't necessarily understand all the, know all these things, you know, what happened, what, you know, what happened and this and that. So you just take it that these are good, you know, something good, but it's not that now you turn that into a ritual. You understand? It's a matter of what is recommended by the acharyas. So we see the same kind of principle in that pastime with Sanatan Goswami and Madan Mohan when he was staying at this devotee's house in Mathura. And so they were taking care of him, doing everything for him, but they weren't necessarily following the rules. So the point is that devotion is there. So in the Veda, you see so many stories like this. So the Lord will take anything, you know, Krishna Sardagrahi. So anything you're doing, he'll take that. And that's nice. And it's good because it's in line with the scriptures. Just like, let's say, if a karmi doesn't know about, the scriptural rule, but then somehow or another, he just naturally follows some rule because he just feels it's right or good to do. He's getting benefit for it. If he knows the rule and that's why he's following it, that's better, you know. But the thing is even he doesn't, it's still, you're going to get the benefit. You know, if you give in charity, whether you understand the principle of charity is given in the Shastra or not, you still get benefit. So anything that's going to be in line with what is recommended in the process of pure devotion, but you'll have that one aspect. But then, Moses is pointing out, he doesn't actually understand the glories of God and all that. But at the same time is that there's also an incompleteness there also in Moses's understanding. So he has a great understanding, is very committed, we see that, but he doesn't necessarily understand the kindness in the personal interactions. So for Moses there'll be more of the rules and everything very proper and everything like that. At the same time, that spontaneous devotional aspect, it was not, you know, his strong point, you know. So, but that doesn't mean that they're both not, you know, strong in their own position. So the point is that that doesn't, just because he's done that doesn't make now Moses not a devotee. It's just that he's looking at it from his position, you know, which will have more of a, you know, the God means more of as the Paramatma aspect, that he's God, he's the great, he's all these things. While the other person is taking more of a spontaneous, that he's a person, but he doesn't actually know much about him being a person. You know, does that make sense? So you'll see this coming up here and there all throughout, you know, all the religious history within the world like that. But all these examples and all these points are all in the Vedic literatures and all given by the acharyas. So the easiest thing is always take it back to excuse me, what the acharyas are, how they're explaining it, because then you see it in a better context. Because otherwise so many questions can come up from it, you know, oh, this guy's a shepherd and he's not a vegetarian and he's not this and that and he's not clean, and you know, so therefore you want to just take the principle of it. That's the only thing to take. The detail of how he's living his lifestyle is he's living that lifestyle. But within that, then there's some devotion. So that's going to be the element that is good. The rest of his lifestyle and that, except for the simplicity and things like that, then is not actually that favorable. But whatever the position, he's seeing it. So that's what Prabhupada's talking about, is whatever the religious platform. The point is it's for developing love of God. That's just the way it is. It's not about this religion, that religion, or anything. That's all just externals. It's about that. No, it's about developing love for God. And so that complete system, as we see, Rupa Goswami's given that. He's been empowered by the Lord to give that. And so the nectar of devotion defines the full package. And so if you follow that, then you can very nicely advance. You know, because of the others, then, you know, how far they'll get in this life, well, you'll see. And then next life, they can continue farther. But what Rupa Goswami is giving is that you follow that nicely, then it's the most, it is the efficient path, because that's the one, that's the preferred path given by Krishna. And if they follow, you know, one thing here or one thing there, they're going to get benefit for those two things. You know, but then the problem is all the other things aren't necessarily going to be helping, and they might even be creating an obstacle. So one wants to avoid that. Does that make sense? So you're supposed to take the essence here is that, yes, that devotion to the Lord is the most essential, and that's what God's giving in that direction. Right? So that's the thing that should be looked for, is that devotion. So if that devotion is looked for, then it has an advantage. But if the devotion is not looked for, then the point has been missed. Does that make sense? And so that's why it's there. So, yeah, it means all of these examples you will find in the Vedic literature. So because it has the complete of all those, and then all these others, then certain things are revealed here and there. You know, and for that will inspire those individuals that are there.
Maharaj, I just think for Vedic culture, it's naturally to know about personal aspect of God, and they could knew that it's good. But for Brahmic religions, it's not so much natural, and it's sometimes when we see these points, it's interesting to understand how they could get it from their previous lives, or it's the nature.
It has to be previous lives. Point is we have to understand there's nothing mystical here that it just happened by chance. It's all happening because the jiva is eternally servant of God. And if they have something, it's just like, let us just take something like this. You have a devotee. He is very, you know, surrendered to Krishna, surrendered to Prabhupada, doesn't like the devotees, doesn't like all the rules and regulations, wants to do whatever he wants to do when he wants to do it. And if he feels that, you know, he feels he goes to the programs or the big festivals and this and that, so he goes for Janmashtami and Gaur Purnima and a few, you know, like this, when he wants, how he wants. Okay? Now, that devotion to Krishna and to Prabhupada has come from the parampara. And so therefore, it's a good thing he has, but his own weakness from his own conditioning and impurities and attachments, then he can't appreciate the association of devotees. He may like someone here and there as long as they agree with him, but as soon as they challenge what he says, he rejects them like that. So now in his next life, because he's, you know, and let's say on top of this, he's against Varnashram. Then in his next life, then he will be born, let's say, in Mayapur, and he'll just be, you know, up farther north in those areas where in the morning you have the loudspeakers making all kinds of noise and stuff like that. And you see, I know, right, from that background, and they have appreciation for Krishna. And that, and Tulsi, and, you know, they do all these kind of things, and for certain individuals and all that. So you see that devotional side. We used to have before in the 80s, the boys that, you know, the big Julan that goes on and over near the Goshala. So that was running since the 80s. That was run by Gurukul boys. I think it's still run by those same boys from the 80s. And so it used to be our laborers in the evening when it was Julan, they'd, you know, go home and after, you know, their work at you know, 1-2 o'clock. You know, go home, and then the evening, you know, after having, you know, nicely taken bath to rest and everything, they come with their whole family, they're all Muslims. And they come, see that, you know, come swing the deities, take prasad and everything, and they're very happy to take part in the festival. So Prabhupada mentioned that previous to the partition in India, the Muslims had all come and take prasad and come to all the major festivals. They dress up and come with their family, and there was a nice relationship there. You know, so you didn't have so much of this, but they just wanted to do their own thing. So someone's so independent and doesn't like the Vedic culture, then yeah, you'll take birth in a position where they're not interested in the Vedic culture. But at the same time, they may have some faith in God and may have some, like here, that person has faith in, you know, in some personality like that. You know, if it's Muhammad and that, and then there, if it's Abraham or Isaac or, you know, somebody has some faith, but not necessarily in anything else. So you're going to have that. We have to see it's a practical thing. So no one's born in the Dom unless they've done devotional service. So every last one of those Muslims, they were devotees in their last life. Every last one of them. And the ones that are really inimical to people are the ones like now, who they just hate everybody. And they're miserable about everything. So those who criticize everybody, they'll end up in this position. And if it's more of us, they'll end up as the jackals, as the dogs, as the birds. As that. They're all devotees. Every last one of them. There's not a microbe there that wasn't a devotee. So you have to understand is that as you do, so you see those are there. They don't want to follow Varnashram. They want to wear their karmic clothes. They want to do this and that and everything just the way they want. It's all about them. Then Krishna will arrange that they have a birth where they can live like that. So this way, that's why you see in these other sampradayas and, you know, I mean, other lines and all that, you know, people that are will be very personal like that. But then other aspects, you know, will be different. And so, you know, in everything, you'll see someone who's very devotional, whether it's in the Buddhist, whether it's in the Jain, the Sikh, whether it's Judaic, you know, Christian, Muslim, you know, whichever things like this or and anything. You always find them because they've done that there. So devotion simply comes from devotional service. It's not coming from that line. It's not coming from there. It's that they've taken birth there because of that. And then those preachers that are there, they try to give something for the people that are there. Because how many people? You have one story like that. One. Because all the other people, if they tried that, it'd be completely crazy. They'd all be a bunch of sahajiyas. But in here, because they follow the regulation, you can see is how easily do people get distracted. You know, the Jews, Moses goes up on the mountain for 40 days. When he comes down, they already have a golden calf that they're worshiping. That means they had to make the mold, get the gold, smelt it, pour the thing, then refine it, polish it, mount it. You know, didn't happen in one day. So that means they lost their faith way, you know, after a few days of him going up. Oh, he's not coming back. Oh, no, this, that. And then they start worshiping their deities again. So, you know, this is what you're dealing with, you know, and you'll look at it in anything. And the Christians, so easily they get distracted. Muslims, so easily they get distracted. You know, everybody gets distracted. And so, therefore, according to the nature of the people in the area, you have to be very, very strict. You know, so it's just according to the nature of the people. And then that's why then it goes. Does that make sense? So the particular preacher at the time preaches to those people in that place how to somehow or another start to bring them in the direction towards Krishna. And then, you know, it becomes categorized as this religion, that religion, and all that. But all they're trying to do is get them to follow the path of pure bhakti. And then you create it like the modern Christian rules. Where did they come from? All the rituals of the Catholics or the Protestants or the Orthodox or the Oriental, where did they come from? Because we have to remember, Jesus and the 12 apostles were all Jewish, practicing. You know, but then with Paul, he got rid of all that. So that means any ritual that the Christian is doing or that, where did it come from? Where did the Muslim rituals come from? You know, does that make sense? Where did it come from? They made it up. You know, it's in line with, it supports, it helps their things. You know, it's just like, In Catholicism, you know, you pray like this, or sometimes you see they're praying like this, but you put your hands together. But in the Orthodox, they put their hands like this, you know, oh, you know, my Lord, there, you know, that feeling of surrender here, it's being, you know, that surrender through prayer, and this is that, you know, giving. So it just matches those people. But they both have meaning. If you're saying, oh, yes, please, exactly like this and that, or, you know, I'm so humble at this and that, then, so they both work. It's just that for one group of people, one works nicely, and the other group, another works nicely. So those persons who are preaching, then they give what they can. And people do. So therefore, there's no bewilderment about off like this and that. So does that mean, it means the point is if you stick to those points of pure devotion, yes, you'll move forward. But at the same time, where's the support? Where is the sadhana and cultural support of pure devotion? You know, especially in the Christian, there's nothing. There's no regulation on anything, at least in the Orthodox Judaic and Islamic. There's some regulation on what they eat and how they dress. But even then, you know, it doesn't necessarily address everything. You know, like I mentioned in the Bible, the Shema, it's like, you know, always remember God at all times, the day, night, whatever you're doing, always be absorbed in God. That's what it's trying to say. So that's the bhakti. That's the conclusion of the whole, you know, Pentateuch, you know, the whole Torah. But the thing is that, you know, people say, oh, that's so hard. You know, Christians say, oh, who can follow the 10, you know, the Ten Commandments, and, you know, and it's just, you know. So the point is that therefore, then when the Yuga Avatar comes, Lord Chaitanya, then he reveals the full process, and then one can take advantage. And whatever is there in other religions that have that connection at those points, then that's nice. But the point is the complete package is given here. By Rupa Goswami, by Sanatan Goswami, you know, they've given the full packet, how to do, what is the way to do, what's the mood, what's the lifestyle, and still its principles. And then you have its natural traditional application, you know, so that if you are preaching and traveling, then yeah, you have to make some adjustment here and there, but you know the principles, so you don't miss out. But it's not based on an attachment. I liked wearing this, so therefore. No, it's a matter of what works in the situation based on the principle. And then you pull it back when you can. In other words, it's just like I'm out traveling. I don't have anything good to eat, you know, nothing home cooked or anything like that. Doesn't mean when I get home now, I just order out for pizza and then get fast foods and this and that. Oh, you know, when we're traveling, it's like that. No, when they get home, they start cooking. So same way when they're out traveling, maybe... You're very simple in how you're applying the process, but as soon as you come back to your home, then you're going to follow nicely because that's your lifestyle. And if they don't, that means then it's not their lifestyle. You know? And so you have to see if they remember Krishna at the time of death, great. You know, if not, they go to the heavenly planets, this, that, you know, fine, nice. But they have to be very careful, especially if they have a problem with devotees, they have a problem with the scriptures, they have a problem with, you know, our tradition and culture, then yes, then it'll be arranged that they don't get that opportunity to take birth in a position where that is not available. And then if at some point by association they get serious, then you see, they naturally come forward and take up the process. So that's why we see people from every background, whatever their religious or irreligious background they were, they can all come forward and take up Krishna consciousness. But they have to be very, very careful and not let you know, things from the previous lives overwhelm them. And so then they start identifying with these things. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Yes, okay. Even without so-called, continuing with Prabhupada's purport, even without so-called liberation, a pure devotee is aspirant for the satisfaction of the Lord. Influenced by the Kama spirit, Arjuna declined to fight in the Kurukshetra battle because he wanted to have his relatives for his own satisfaction. So he sees Krishna as arranged that Arjuna, you know, then comes under this, by Yoga Maya, comes under this illusion that he wants to, you know, enjoy the company of the relatives and everything like that. And so then you see is then this pastime can take place. He's arranged. So he declined to. But being a pure devotee, he agreed to fight on the instruction of the Lord because he came to his senses and realized that satisfaction of the Lord at the cost of his own satisfaction was his prime duty, right? So he says he's a pure devotee. So then we see also many times that devotees who have shown very great, devotional position and the development in that then sometimes becomes distracted. If it means material energy is such as if your focus goes off for a moment, you can get distracted. And so people who were doing everything for Prabhupada, you know, years ago, then today may be distracted and looking at their own position and all that. But all it takes is like here, some nice association, some nice instruction and all that. And again, they come back to what that position they attain. Because once you have attained to a position, it's not lost. As Prabhupada said, become 50% Krishna conscious, then when you come back to that position, you'll start at 51. So then someone's maybe very advanced and done so much, and then they get distracted. When they get serious again, they won't start from where they are there. They'll go right back to where they were. So that also has to be understood, is the devotional process is beyond our mundane calculation and all that. That someone's done this, they can never be advanced, or this one's, doing this act. You know, he works at a karmi job, so he could never be a pure devotee or this or that or whatever it is. No, but that's because that's what needs to be done now, or he's distracted and gotten into that. But once he gets serious again, you see, he'll be serious just like he was before. So one always has to understand is that it's that bhakti that is there. That's what makes anything else of any value. Just like, let's say I have 10 electronic devices. None of them are plugged in. So as long as they're not plugged in, they're actually technically, is practically useless because they do nothing. So it's only when they're plugged into the current, now they become useful. As long as they're connected to the current. But as soon as they're unconnected, they're again useless. So that's the whole point. You see, it's sitting there, it's doing nothing and all this, and it's useless. But as soon as you plug it in, now it does so much. And then if you unplug it, then it'll become useless. But you plug it in again, it'll continue where it was. So it's a very, very important thing is that there is no material position can destroy devotional service. There isn't one. All that can destroy, is if we are offensive to the Vaishnavas and offensive to the Lord, that can destroy something. But otherwise, everything else is just a distraction, a fall down. That's why the first offense is considered the worst, because that can destroy everything. The other offenses, then they're going to create problems, but they're not going to destroy everything. Does that make sense? So that's what's there.
For example, someone will leave Krishna consciousness and will go to some impersonal teaching.
Right.
Will it be offensive, and then a devotee will lose all of his level, or it will be just temporary destruction?
It'll be covered. It'll be covered, but you don't know how long it'll be covered. So that's why then Prabhupada doesn't recommend that anybody take the risk. Because you could get covered for, tens, hundreds, thousands, millions of lifetimes before coming back. So then so much trouble. Because the point is it's already been established that nothing on the impersonal platform, nothing on the platform of karma, nothing on the platform of piety, nothing on the platform of, economic development or politics or any particular religious practice, any of these will give any satisfaction to the soul. So there's no point. So you have to see is why are they going? They just get distracted and all that, because that's their background, that's the thing, then it happens. But if it's because of being offensive to the Vaishnavas and all that, then it will have more of an effect. It may be longer. Like Nittai, he was one of Prabhupada's, he's always around with Prabhupada. He was one of the early ISKCON scholars, but the problem is he got distracted so much by the scholarliness. And so then he went to Prabhupada one day and said that he wants to take Prabhupada's blessings to go to this different guru, because he's found that his teachings, he can more relate and all this and that. And, he feels it was nice. He was in Krishna consciousness and he feels that's great, but he wants to leave and go to this other guru. So Prabhupada says, yes, I give you a blessing for 1 million lifetimes. You'll not meet a bona fide guru. And so, so he left because he didn't seem to care. So that's the whole thing, is when you come in contact with the real thing, why go from others? Just because, other people don't necessarily, do everything wonderful and set the good example. I've noticed a lot of time, at least I'll give an example of something like coming to Mayapur. I noticed very early that there was this idea that Mayapur would be, it's the spiritual world, so therefore materially everything will be perfect. Everybody there will all be absorbed in Krishna and rolling on the ground and chanting in ecstasy and wonderful kirtans, and everybody deals so perfectly, like that. And if anything goes wrong, it's everybody else's fault. I've seen it. I remember one Mataji, she had a little girl and she thought it's a spiritual world, so there's no thing. She let her girl run all over the place. And one day, some locals were bothering in that, some other Bengali devotees came along, saw that, took the girl because she was arrested, and then brought her, into the temple area, and then, tried to find, where the mother was, turned her over to the, the temple managers and all that. And then they called the mother, but it's a spiritual world. Nothing can go wrong and all this and that. And if there is, then everybody's demons, and it's one or the other. So I've seen that on so many occasions. If everybody, someone came to the Gurukul, all the Bengali boys aren't just sitting, singing, bits of Narottam Das Thakur while they're sweeping, and they're all absorbed in ecstasy. And if not, then everybody's a bunch of demons. So we have to understand is if we're an individual and we've come to Mayapur, we've come to Krishna consciousness for our development and all that, and we have faults and we have that, so is every last other person who comes to Krishna consciousness, every one of them. And so that means it's like a hospital. Everybody in the hospital is sick. We have to get over this idea that, no, I'm the only one that can be sick in the hospital. Everybody else has to be, Arnold Schwarzenegger, they have to be like, perfection of health. And if they're not, then this hospital is absolutely useless. It's like we have to go beyond this kind of simplistic ideas. No, the whole place is the hospital. And those who are better at it, they help people who are less better at it. Therefore, the doctors and other things like that, they're doing what they can, but they're following the science. So if they tell you, take this medicine, it's good for this disease, it doesn't matter whether they're taking the medicine or not. It still works. You take it, you'll get the benefit. So if they say you chant, you'll get benefit. If you chant, you'll get benefit, even if they're not chanting. There's not a thing as, oh, they're not chanting, so it doesn't work. No, the chanting is eternal. It's pure. It works despite everybody else, despite everything. That's the beauty of bhakti. That's what Jiva Goswami is trying to point out. Bhakti alone is the conclusion. Bhakti alone is the independent. Bhakti alone is this and that. So people have doubts and all that, and they come up with all their strange philosophies and, religious processes and culture and everything like that. But that doesn't mean that pure bhakti isn't pure bhakti. It still works because it's bhakti. It has nothing to do with them and their strange way of doing things. So we always have to understand is that if someone else is not, it doesn't matter. It's like, let's say we're in the army and we're out on the battlefield. And so the officer says, okay, this is what we're going to do. Keep your head down, do this and that. And so for taking care, he sticks his head up and gets his head blown off. Does that mean now everything he said is bogus? That's the point. You don't do this, you get your head blown off. He got his head blown off, so he set a good example. So that's why even if you see senior devotees and they get distracted and all that, that's the point. It doesn't matter who you are. If you do this nonsense, you get distracted. So why is it now, oh, I can't follow, no one can follow, it's not possible for anyone to do? No. The point is, the process is eternal. Process is given by Krishna. Process is proven. That's where the Shastras show so many great personalities who've attained perfection by following it. And so that's why then we take the essence. Devotees are known as Saragrahi. They take the essence. They don't go for the soar. That's flies. So we have to be very, very careful as know that, yes, we're in the material world. We've been here a long time. So naturally, you know, we still somehow know to have a little bit of hope the material will be good, though we are a bit frustrated. That's why we took up devotional service. And at the same time, as we're also a bit skeptical. So we apply that skepticism also on the devotees and this and that. But the point is no, the process is eternal. The process is pure. The process is perfect. And it's not dependent on whether we follow it or not, or someone else follows it or not. It's still perfect. You know, let's say you have a perfect recipe for making sweet rice. It doesn't matter whether anybody's cooking it or not, or people have not followed the recipe and got a bad result. The recipe is still perfect, and you follow it, you will get the results. When in America, people were doubting Hari Nam and book distribution and dressing as devotees and doing all these different things, and no, we have to be more up to date. And so they were pulling back on that, and they were not making any devotees. In Russia, then they were going out and they were doing the kirtan and had faith in Guru, had faith in this, and everything was expanding because they followed it. The bhakti is eternal. It's not dependent upon, oh, you could do that back in the 60s, you know, when Prabhupada was here, it was a different time. It's eternal. It works today as well as it did yesterday, and it'll still work after 1,000 years. It doesn't matter. Bhakti is independent. We follow it, it will work. We don't follow it, it doesn't work. And that's the whole point. Someone doesn't follow it, things fall apart. They follow it, it works. It's very, very straightforward because it's the touch of bhakti that makes it work. So for the machine, you put in the electricity, it works. That's all. It works. And as soon as you drop it, so therefore, all the varnashram, all the study, all the charity, all the morality, all the, you know, the good business and all the nice community and philanthropic work, all these are nice as long as there's current from bhakti there. But if there's not, it's just more dead matter doing more dead matter stuff. You know, it's like mannequins. You get all these different things with the doll and you have the strings and they move and you have a whole drama and all that. That's all that's going on. The soul is there watching and identifying, oh, I'm that wooden doll. And the other said, no, I'm this wooden doll. So then we fight and we kill each other. But the point is no, nobody's actually killed anybody. Because we're not these wooden dolls. So one has to appreciate that one can do all those things, but it just means that you're putting off the inevitable that you have to take up properly Krishna conscious anyway to get out of here, because nothing else will get you out of here, as is pointed out. Thoughts of becoming one with the Lord or being merged with Brahmajyoti can also be exhibitions of kama spirit if they have desires for one's satisfaction, be free from material misery. So therefore, people take up the impersonalism and the Buddhism and you know, any of these impersonal paths simply for their own material desire, that they want to be free from material miseries. That's it. There's nothing else because it can't get you anything else. It can't get you anything else. It's that simple. So that's why then with the devotional process, it's so wonderful that if you take it up, whatever you've gotten, that's eternal. And whenever you take it seriously, it will immediately continue in whatever was the topmost position that you attained to before. That's the glory of bhakti, is that it's not even someone gets distracted, it doesn't matter. It's not the end of the world. You just come back and continue wherever you were, and then it becomes glorious. That's the amazing point of bhakti. It's not dependent upon nice situations or not, or you know, this and that, whatever has gone wrong, because you can say is, you know, whatever it is, but last life, you know, what was going on, and life before that. So the point is it's an ongoing process. It's not about what happened when they were a devotee. It's what's happening to them, the soul. They're in the position of devotee. That's the best opportunity. They leave that, then now the opportunity is not as good. Then you see the mentality, how it goes, at the time of death, what happens. Therefore, you know, what's their next birth? Does any of this make sense? Does this work? Yeah. So in other words, it's not recommended. Okay. Thus, he became Akama, Arjuna, continuing with the purport. That is the perfect stage of a perfect living being. So becoming Akama, that's the thing. So having the kama of either Dharma, Artha, or Moksha, because it's a lot of times they say, oh, I want liberation, so therefore that's spiritual, but it's still a material desire. It may be the spiritual side of material desire, but you'll never get out of the material world. You may get out of the individual universe, but you won't get out of Mahakalapura. You can't. Gopal Kumar saw all those people then absorbed in Mahakalapura. They're all in their bodies. They may be subtle bodies, but they're maybe not, or it's not subtle. They may be, maybe they have their form, but they think that they're merged in Brahman because they can't see everything's bright. He can see them, you know, like that. So there is no such thing as merging into the Lord and your existence is lost. No, you just temporarily think it's lost because that's the way you think. But ultimately, no. You are an individual. You'll stay an individual no matter what you do. You know, and even if we're talking about the impersonal, people are inspired by Shankaracharya as a person, or Padmapada as a person, you know, or Lord Buddha as a person. No one's inspired by nothingness. Because we're people, so we're inspired by people. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, anything else? Anybody otherwise? Okay. We'll end here for today. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.